Actually, HR is not my career only. It's my true passion, my life.
Now get ready for a really amazing episode with a lady called Marie-Louise EK.
I did read a very good book about why we sleep, which nobody actually seems to know why we actually sleep, but we still need to sleep.
She is the global HR resources boss.
Only the cost of mental and well-being is $1 trillion a year. We don't even think about that number, and we don't think about mental and well-being particularly much.
She really is at the forefront of HR.
If we don't ask, nobody will tell, and then we will not hear. Relationship between finance and HR is super strong, right? And you know, we need to build that very strong link. Specifically, you think about young people that come out. I mean, how are they going to understand what a workplace is? And how are they going to be embedded in the culture?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the podcast in partnership with Megaverse. More about them later. Now, for those of you that haven't subscribed, I really need you to. If you would, it would be fantastic. Now, I know it's easy for you just to consume this content without subscribing, but for us, it's really important because the more subscribers we have, the better chance we have of getting better and better guests, the kind of guests that you would really like on this show. I will do my best along with the team to produce the best content we possibly can to make your experience as enjoyable as possible. So if you can, I'd really appreciate it. Now get ready for a really amazing episode with a lady called Marie-Louise EK. She is the global HR resources boss of Hilton. That's a big organization. Just in this region, there's over 180 hotels and 30,000 employees. So she really is at the forefront of HR and the impact leadership has and wellness has on the success of that business and other businesses she's worked with in the past. She's not just a VP, she's a certified executive coach and a fervent advocate for agility, technology, and well-being. From her pioneering work at Sandvik, a Swedish technology group, to leadership roles at APM Terminals, Bridgestone, Coty Professional Beauty, and PepsiCo, she has been a driving force in team building, positive employee experiences, and successful organizational transformations. Join us as we dive into Marie-Louise's fascinating journey, and today we're about to unravel the secrets of her success. Let's get on with it. Cue the music. Go. Megaverse. The digital frontier of tomorrow. Megaverse stands at the cutting-edge intersection of technology and imagination. It's a virtual realm where the limitless expanse of the digital universe unfolds, offering users unparalleled experiences and interactions. With its advanced metaverse platform, users can craft unique avatars, forge connections, and even establish their own digital estates. It's more than just virtual reality. Megaverse is an expansive digital civilization teeming with opportunities for both individuals and brands. From immersive concerts to revolutionary retail experiences, Megaverse is redefining the way we engage with the digital world. As we stand on the brink of a new era where the lines between our physical reality and the digital realm blur, Megaverse is poised to lead the charge in this brave new world. Dive in and discover a universe without bounds. This really is the future. Marie-Louise, thank you very much for coming to join us on the podcast today.
It is my true pleasure to be here.
You have been a HR whiz forever.
Yes. Thank you for acknowledging that.
You studied it. I don't often hear this when someone goes to university and studies something and then it becomes their career. I've met so many people over the years that might be in a certain industry. And I'm like, so what did you study? Oh, I studied petrochemical engineering. I'm like, well, how did you get into PricewaterhouseCoopers when you were how did that happen? But you're one of these people. So why did you study HR at university? What was the attraction for you?
Actually, first, I wanted to become a psychologist. Uh-huh. And I studied quite hard, but not hard enough. So I didn't come into exactly that program. So then I was like, what else is there that is similar? And I found HR management. I didn't know about it before, but I'm actually very grateful I chose that instead because it's perhaps less clinical. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's more professional, more business-like, I would say. So yeah, I studied, I graduated in 99, and ever since then, actually HR is not my career only, it's my true passion, my life.
And when you look at it from those early days of starting in that world and you compare it to nowadays, I mean, how many years has that career been?
23.
Okay, so we've got two decades essentially that we're dealing with. How has it evolved?
It has changed quite a bit, I would have to say. Maybe it started a bit being a bit more, not only admin, that was back in the 80s, I think, and I started working like in the early 2000s. But it has evolved ever since. And I think, you know, the focus on how you derive at business results through people is just more and more acknowledged. So that means also, you know, we have changed in HR, the focus on people processes, the focus on value of what you do with people, for people, through people has changed.
When I look at my kind of early parts of my career, I was kind of grateful to have a job, did what the boss told me to do, got my head down, tail up, and was one of those people that literally always thought, you know, I'm lucky to be here. It seems to have evolved for me from being this place where I was lucky to be there to people nowadays thinking, you're lucky to have me.
Yes.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think it is fair. I mean, it should be a win-win at the end of the day, right? And that's what we're really striving towards. But I think we are, as organizations, we are lucky to be chosen by people to want to join us. And then we're lucky to have them. And then we want to make sure that they feel happy and lucky to be with us, right? So that they are like, wow, this is the place I want to be. I want to stay here. I want to grow here. That's what we need to focus on. And, you know, that's what HR is. I think that's what we're doing today, whereas maybe less focused on that earlier days.
I mean, you look at data that's been gathered over the years, do you think that wellness and wellness programs and stuff like that have come from data, or is it just that people have evolved and started to demand different things as part of their kind of like compensation and employment program?
I think if I look back in the days, like when I started working, it was well-being was still there, but it was only about, I would say, fitness, you know. So okay, I could get 1 week off during work, no, 1 week, sorry, 1 hour off a week to go for a walk, or, you know, and then you get paid subscription to gyms, etc. So it was all about fitness. And then now, if I look at well-being, I like to call it holistic well-being, you know, which is a much broader concept. And I think it has evolved because people have also evolved. And the people that work in workplaces today, they have also broadened. Right, we have a great diversity of people contributing to work today than we used to before, and with that comes also different views of well-being, different demands. People are playing so many different roles that we would like them to be able to play. You know, it's not only you come to work and, you know, that's your whole life. Actually, there is a strong belief amongst many people and many organizations that you're actually delivering better today if you are allowed to be, you know, a whole person and a holistic human being. And that drives, you know, the well-being focus for sure.
So let's talk about wellness and understand what it is then in your mind. You've got this huge organization that you're part of. There's a lot of people working in that organization from top to bottom or bottom to top, whichever way you want to look at it. What is wellness in your business? What are the kind of like the key aspects of wellness that generally the business tends to focus on?
We speak today about, so if we break down like the holistic well-being, one is the physical part. And that's, you know, that's still there in the business I'm working in today. It's a lot of people in operations. So they get, you know, they work physically with their bodies already. But coupled with physical is also nutrition. You know, what is it that we put into our bodies today? You know, how do we manage our energy levels, our blood sugar, and, you know, all those kind of things in terms of understanding, you know, nutrition of what we eat. And then the third aspect of physical is sleep. You know, I speak with a lot of people today that attest to, you know, I don't think I sleep enough, and I don't think that my sleep is, you know, qualitative enough. And that's a huge challenge, right? The impact on performance through sleep is pretty big. So that's the physical part. Then we have the whole mental aspect of well-being as well, you know, feeling secure at work, feeling that you can, you know, talk about what you want to talk about, being seen, being heard, being listened to. And also, of course, mental well-being challenges that people have that maybe workplaces can't cater to because we're not experts in that field. And I would say the third aspect is the social, you know, being able to anchor socially at work and also having fun and joy. You know, these are huge aspects of well-being. And if any of those are missing today, I don't think we are feeling totally whole as human beings. And that's what we focus on at work as well throughout our organization.
When you think about here in the UAE, lots of expatriates, the third thing you mentioned about the social, it's almost like you start at a new country with a new company and your employees become almost your ready-made, so your colleagues become your ready-made family. Like instantly, it's like, I've now got friends or I've got people that I can arrange to play tennis with or go for a drink with or have dinner with and stuff like that. Whereas back home, in our home countries, I think it's a little bit different. Do you agree?
I do agree. And it's funnily enough, I spoke to a friend the other day and we have a common friend who used to live here. She moved to UK and then she's coming back now after 4 years. I said, I can't establish myself. I don't find friends. You know, but she doesn't have a family, so she doesn't have a natural way into school, for example. And she's an entrepreneur, so she doesn't have a natural way into a workplace either. And when you are in Dubai or UAE, there's so many people who come here. Many people are open and, you know, let me meet new friends. I don't know anybody here. I'm really keen to get engaged and get to know people. So that makes it, I think, from the social aspect, the social well-being here can be easier. But we shouldn't forget, it can also be extremely lonely if you actually happen to find nobody.
Okay, let's talk about these things. So let's talk about fitness and health and that kind of stuff and sleep, which you speak about. Is sleep been something that you've been aware of for a long time, or did you learn about it personally just a few years back? When did it become important?
Yeah, I think personally, I've always been a super bad sleeper, like really, really bad. And I have, you know, started to be interested. I did read a very good book, can't remember the name now, about, you know, why we sleep, which nobody actually seems to know why we actually sleep, but we still need to sleep. And you know, I find it, I try to tell myself, instead of waking up and saying, oh my God, I didn't sleep enough. Ah, yes, I slept like 4 hours, you know, I'm so happy. And you know, it still, you know, gives me energy. So I think the sleeping part is really important. We really, you know, take care of our bodies during the night. And I think the sleep challenges that when I speak to people and what they attest to, why they have challenges, because it's a lot of concerns and stress and worries. And, you know, when you lay down by yourself in your dark bedroom or wherever you sleep, you know, the mind doesn't relax and cool off. The mind goes on working on things that you haven't been working on during the day. That's a challenge, right? Can we try to solve those things during the day so that during the night we can give back to ourselves and, you know, take our rest that we need?
So when we consider those things, whether it be sleep, whether it be exercise, nutrition, in your organization, what kind of data did you gather to demonstrate the difference it would make? And then what precise changes did you make? I mean, because sleep, as an example, is a tough one, you know. Imagine your employer, get to sleep, you know. No, you need more sleep. Unless everybody's got like a Whoop band on or an Aura ring or one of these types of things that's measuring sleep, how does a business ever kind of like conquer that problem and solve it?
Yeah, I mean, one way to it is towards relaxation, right? And giving people ample time to relax. We can't really control the sleep as such, and we're not trying. We're not there yet, at least as an organization today. But giving people places at the workplace, for example, you know, the business we're in, we are serving people. You do that 24/7, right? And however you feel, you need to show a positive outlook towards the guest and the customer, right? So you can't really just be yourself all the time. So it's very important for us that we provide, for example, places at the workplace where people can thrive, as we call it, and relax. Go back and have their own time for themselves in a place which is nice. And that has to do with aesthetics, coziness, you know, a place where they can sit and really be allowed to relax and do things that they want to do. That's one thing. The other thing is also driving, you know, how is our work schedule? How are our, you know, schemes? How are our contracts set up? What's the working hours? In we're trying to challenge the norm here by doing better than the labor law is prescribing, so that because we understand that people need more rest than necessarily is prescribed by the law. And I'm super proud of that, and I think that works as well. And the data we look at is we have engagement surveys, which many organizations do, right? And we have specific questions around, when I'm off work, do I feel like I can, you know, cut off and relax? And do I feel in generally healthy and balanced in the total aspect of my life? And, you know, the last year we had a result, we put in some efforts, and we got the result a few months back, which are just increased very much in exactly the areas that we focused on. So with effort and with dedication, you know, that pays off, but you really need to be focused on it and push forward for activities.
How do you sell that to your employees, your colleagues? I mean, how is that? Because some people would hear that and initially go, that's fantastic. Wow, how cool is that? But I'm sure that there's a percentage of the employees in the company going, all right.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, everybody is who they are, and we come from different backgrounds, and we bring with us different views also on well-being. And as with any typical change management, you know, you will have a few ambassadors, and you will have some who needs a bit more convincing to get over the line. I think fundamentally, most people would not disagree with the fact that well-being is important and that well-being pays off, right? If we have employees that feel good, they can deliver better, which is good for business, etc. But I think, you know, if people don't have the habits themselves, and they're not used to, they haven't experienced themselves, they haven't pushed, they haven't thought about well-being themselves, you know, that's very difficult to embrace. And I think personal habits, right, if you're not into it also, and maybe sometimes if you haven't had it in the budget the year before, you would like, okay, it's a great thing, but, you know, when we scrutinize the budget, okay, what's the ROI on this, and is this really where we want to focus on? So I think these are some of the aspects why there might be resistance, but I think generally people buy into it. And anyway, it's the 80-20 rule. Like, we focus on the 80% ambassadors. The 20%, I think, will come over the line eventually because they will be inspired and they will see that it works for others.
When you look at obesity as an example, that's been on the rise globally for the last 20 or 30 years. It's been measured and noticing that kids are nowadays bigger than they were. This is clearly a problem. And before, in many cases, before anyone's even started work, let alone once they're at work, there's a risk if you've got key people in a business that if their health is impacted seriously, then they won't be able to do the job, but the business will have to find someone to replace them, and all of the hassle and drama that goes with that. How do you help educate people to prevent some of these problems? Do you have a workshop that you run once a month? Do you just have it in an updated email that goes out? Do you have an internal, podcast, for example? How do you communicate with people so that they can really understand that you're aware of some of the challenges without kind of like poking them directly with it?
So we actually have a philosophy at work which we call Thrive. And we have it's a global platform that is available and open to everybody, which contains a lot of tools and resources, okay, right? And people learn in different ways. So there are some live WebExes with experts. We don't, you know, claim to be experts ourselves. So we would, of course, work with those who are great at sleep or nutrition or agility or taking care of, you know, teenage challenges, etc. as a parent. And we focus on offering people to take care of themselves, taking care of their team members, you know, if they are leaders. But then also the third part, which is great, I think, and it's really expanding, is taking care of loved ones. You know, acknowledging that people play so many different roles at work, and we as a workplace can actually help people realizing and getting tools and support in terms of several of those roles. So that's what we do. And then, you know, we try to market this through internal, marketing campaigns, right? You know, come and listen. We do co-viewing. Say, hey, we'll have popcorn. Let's sit together and look at this and be inspired. And then we can have group discussions afterwards. But, you know, scaling in a big business, also in a small business, right? You need to really decide on the focus and then make sure that as many people as possible becomes aware of what you're offering and engage people to do it.
A lot of the stuff that we're talking about right now, and we'll expand on this, some might say is smushy stuff, okay? Or some might say is woo-woo and fluffy, because they've either been worked in a regime where the man at the top is, or the lady at the top is, a dictator and demands X and demands Y and expects everyone to crack on, or they believe that there's no real way of measuring performance with these types of things. There's no, you know, it's nice, and of course if we've got the budget to do it, then it would be nice to do some nice things, you know. But most companies, and maybe not as big as yours, more in an SME space, for example, might do the down the pub once a month for drinks, or the quarterly team building event where they go into a hotel ballroom and they have to do some things, whatever that may be, and think that they're making a difference that way, or they're ticking the boxes. An organization as big as yours clearly has to do a lot of research to make sure when you spend the money, it makes sense. For those smaller companies, what can they learn from you?
Yeah, I think, you know, actually there is a lot of resources that anybody can find. Like, you can go and I went into, you know, I checked World Health Organization, you know, a few days back for a discussion I was having, and they estimate that only the cost of mental unwell-being is $1 trillion a year, right? That's and we don't even think about that number, and we don't think about mental unwell-being particularly much. So there's a lot of resources and focus. And I think what maybe big corporations who might have a bit more resources, both financially and headcount-wise as well, can really you know, support and educate smaller players is by inspiration, right? And we know these things work because we do have the data, because many big companies have rigorous engagement service, employee service, where you actually ask the employees themselves. And I would always encourage any organization to do that. Don't build things without asking the users first, and we get a lot of input from the people actually being, you know, on, you know, if they're in the retail space or whatever there might be, you know, these employees, they have opinions and they have input, and they sometimes have very simple solutions to solving the biggest challenges that they have, which might not be to go for an after work, right? There might be something else. They might need more flexibility. They might need a little bit more time to go and pick up a child from school, or they might need, you know, a staff accommodation that is not super far away, where it takes a long time to go on the bus, and these kind of more simple solutions. But if we don't ask, nobody will tell, and then we will not hear.
Mm-hmm. A lot of what we're talking about, or everything that we're talking about, if we refer it back to the share price or the profitability, that's really why these types of things are done, to get everybody to perform at their peak in an environment where they're really happy. Being in HR as long as you have you experienced challenges dealing with finance over wanting to implement certain strategies along the way where the finance team have pushed back because they're not so sure themselves and they see it as spending rather than investing?
Yeah, I mean, it has evolved throughout the years, and you mentioned the word fluff before, right? There, you know, there's probably still some people that think this is fluffy HR stuff, but I think, you know, many organizations are mature, and I think the relationship between finance and HR is super strong, right? And you know, we need to build that very strong link, and it's a matter of, I think, showing the impact that it has. One of the things that we can do is, It is difficult to show the impact on the bottom line straight from, you know, health and well-being efforts. But what I would say is that we are competing today, right? Every organization is competing about talent today. And if you want to be the workplace where you want people to come, be engaged to apply, and you want the best ones, right? And you, when they join you, you want them to stay, then focusing on the well-being efforts so that they give you a net promoter score and, you know, they decide to stay within your organization and not leave. Because the cost of recruitment is something that we can indicate, right, and show. the time and effort of reintroducing people, training people, onboarding people, and then, you know, having them leave. This is a very big cost, both financially and resource-wise, which is also cost, by the way, right? Time is cost. So that's a very, very clear link. And I think, you know, we do actually have a responsibility to create great workplaces if we can. You know, those organizations that have that opportunity should do that for the greater good, I think, of humankind, right? More and more people are starting to work. And that's a great thing, right? We're so much more diverse today. And I think we in HR, we can show that, right? We can show how the benefits of diversity, because it's, you know, people see more career growth if you see that, you know, somebody that looks like me is also in a senior role. So, you know, I might decide to stay here, and then we save that money on recruitment and people starting being active. So personally, I haven't struggled too much from finance. I don't think finance in general are against investments, right? As long as they make sense. Mm-hmm. The same as HR is not against salary increases, as long as they make sense. I don't think there is the triangle, you know, between HR, finance, and kind of CEO or president, whatever you want to call it. That's a very strong link. If that doesn't work, then it might be a challenge.
Tommaso Rodriguez is the CEO of Talabat. He was on the show recently. They have 5,000 employees at their office here. They have 80,000 riders. One of the great things I think he does is to get, he goes every quarter out and he rides a motorbike for the day and he delivers food. And I think it's just fantastic that he goes and does that. Yeah, super cool. But he believes in the 5-day work week. And he said, I don't want people working from home. I want everybody in the office. I think there's far more that we can do when we work together than when we're sat at home. Now, I personally, at 54 years old, have some really strong opinions on this. I have to be very careful of my strong opinions, though, because they may be in direct conflict with others. But Tommaso said, "My responsibility is to create the greatest work environment I possibly can so that those people want to be there. And so if you come to our office, Spencer, and they've invited us to go there, you'll come and see what it's like. And then you'll realize why maybe working 5 days a week isn't such a problem. How do you see this whole work from home, flexible working hour type of thing in your own business, but also for your own opinion too?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I love this. No, it's a great discussion and a good debate, and people have very different opinions. Personally, I think, you know, my first, I had a job when I was at university. I worked from home. This was in the mid 90s.
What were you doing?
Yeah. I was out in a call center, so okay. You know, I was watching. It was 24/7, so I was sleeping and picking up the phone and quickly on the laptop. No laptops at that time. My computer, stationary, big fat one. But I think I am also of the opinion that the offices play a huge role in terms of culture build, in terms of making workplaces cool, fun, energizing. That's difficult at home. However, I do believe that in order for us to be able to fulfill all the roles that we play, you know, some people are parents, some people are pet parents, some people take care of elderly, family members. Some people just, you know, want to get some other things done. And the more we can flex, I think the more we can fulfill all those roles. And personally, I believe that, you know, we'll be better at work as well. But I think the office should be a fun place. We also don't dictate this. In general, in the organizations I've been, we haven't dictated, you know, days here and there and so on. But we're trying to make a pull factor to have people coming to the office because they're like, yeah, I want to go to the office. In one organization I was, and I really liked it was a good concept. Actually, it was just after COVID, by the way. We started talking about what's the role of the office, you know, around a couple of letters, like create, you know, you need to create together, celebrate, you want to celebrate together. And then it was two other C's. I don't remember them now. But that's one way to describe it as well. But in general, and I think we want to be in the office. Specifically, you think about young people that come out. I mean, how are they going to understand what a workplace is? And how are they going to be embedded in the culture? And maybe in the future, actually, we won't have workplaces like this. But I still think that will take a huge amount of time before everybody's just scattered and doing their work.
Maybe it's just me, but I think there's a lot of value in being able to chew the fat over the football scores at the coffee machine at 8:30 in the morning. I think that's where people bond, because you can find things in common. You know, you go and work for a company and you've got all these different nationalities, but you meet someone in the company who supports the same soccer team as you. You instantly have the ability to create that bond, or someone who's got twins just like you. You know, whatever it may be, something, there's a connection, you know, they have. They then are able to foster those relationships. I don't get personally how it benefits people. And I understand there's people that I get more done working from home. It benefits people overall, because in most companies, you take Talabat as this one example we mentioned, 80,000 employees aren't allowed to work from home because they're on motorbikes all day, every day. They don't get to choose. And I'm sure in your organization, there's a whole bunch of people that just don't get that option. It's just like, well, you're out on the road and you're doing your stuff, so you can't work from home. So that you in the office on the third floor, guess what? You guys can have flexible working hours if you want. But you guys that are out doing the vans and whatever it may be, sorry, that's not possible. That to me wouldn't breed or foster camaraderie. And I see it in another example, okay, and I'm going to be really controversial here. Medical insurance. I see companies pay for really expensive medical insurance for their senior staff and cheap by comparison medical insurance for their lower income staff. And I'm like, why? The people that are on lower income generally couldn't afford the medical costs of going to Dubai hospitals and stuff like that. Arguably, they would need it more than someone who could afford more. But still, they do that. And that really bothers me. It's just like, if you're going to take care of people, take care of people. Okay? Just because this person doesn't get paid as much and hasn't got such a senior role doesn't mean that they shouldn't be looked after in the same way. As I'm spouting this out and I'm watching your body language as you're listening to me, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, no, you know, sometimes you're right. You want to turn an organization upside down, actually, right? So you have an inverse triangle like this, and, you know, you focus here on this, because 80% of your population is doing the job. I mean, you can say it like that. It's in the industry I'm in, and Talabat as well, right? Obviously, right? Those are the guys that are coming, or the girls, mainly guys maybe, coming, you know, with your products that you have ordered. But on the work from home, I would say I still think that this debate is taking too much time in media and with people. I think we have, from my perspective, we have matured beyond it a bit. Many people are working remotely anyway. If you manage, you know, like a regional team, everybody's not together. There is a huge amount of value of being in the office, for sure. And we provide an office where we want people to come. But I think you know, sometimes when we talk about flexibility, people get obsessed about working from home and think that's like the only thing around flexibility. And it's not. There is a lot more. Specifically, like you say, you know, how do you cater in our industry or in Talabat? How do you cater to flexibility? I don't think that the people driving the motorbikes or the ones working for us who can't work from home, they feel bad because some other people work from home, because they know that's part of what they are doing, right? But how can we make sure we are flexible with them, right? So how can we drive, for example, a much better work week than are stipulated by the labor law, so that we show that, you know, we are doing everything we can to care for your well-being? Yeah, you cannot work from home, but there are other ways to do flexibility as well. I think that's what we can do, and we should all be doing that. You know, you can never sleep and just say, well, this is heavy operation, so you can't really... It is what it is, right? This reasoning will never, I will never accept it.
Okay, talk to me about coaching. Okay. When you look at people within organisations, should companies offer coaching, mentoring, or the ability to invest their time in further education? I don't know, that might be an MBA or something like that. From the point of view of wanting that person to be a peak performer in the business and grow and evolve.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, like who would say no to this question? I don't know if anybody does, but definitely.
Say, no, people say yes sometimes, but they say, you want coaching? Oh, you want an executive coach? Or oh, you want to study an MBA? Well, I tell you what we'll do. We'll give you the time to study, but it's on you. Rather than you work for this organization, your skills are going to be utilized in this organization, and it's an investment we should be making as a business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I would say mentoring is like a super low-hanging fruit, because mentoring, you use internal leaders. They get training on their leadership skills, their active listening, their coaching capabilities, etc. And the ones that are mentees, they obviously get to be mentored by, you know, somebody with more experience or different experience or whatever their needs, you know, whatever have been identified. So that's a low-hanging fruit, and more companies should utilize that. By the way, it doesn't even cost anything. It costs internal time and some coordination effort, but that's it, right? And that's huge value in that. Coaching as well. Today, there's a lot of solutions. You don't need to have, you know, in everyone doesn't need an executive coach. You know, you can have that online today. You can have shorter sessions. You know, it's at your fingertips at a much more, I would say, lower cost, if that's a concern for organization, which it would be, right, for, you know, executive coaching for everyone. So absolutely, definitely. And then I think the more senior you become, your development needs are quite individual. And that's really where there's a huge benefit of you know, having a more coach to cater to, you know, the discussions and the needs and the challenges that you are facing in that particular time as, you know, more of a senior executive.
When we look at talent and try and understand bringing talent in, we see that the data shows us that 1 in 4 employees leave in Dubai every year for a different job. And that's from top to bottom. There's a spread, and some companies are better and some companies are worse, as we know. How do you attract, or what is it you need to offer to attract the right kind of talent into your business, and how successful are you at doing it?
Yeah, so when we look at trends in terms of, you know, what are the big things that are going on in the workplace and the landscape today, what people need, first of all, they want purpose. People want to work for an organization that is there to do more than make money. So you really have to do storytelling around, you know, what is this organization here about, and how are you going to be able to fit in and be able to also deliver on your own purpose here, to feel fulfilled, right? People have choices today, and they will choose what's best for them. The other one is really the kind of individual needs, you know, because we're so diverse today, people really have, the people that work today have different needs, different roles. I don't think that one size fits one. That's never going to work, right? We can't have 100% individual needs that we can cater to, but we need to be a bit more flexible and understanding more. We spoke about flexibility, so that's one thing. The other one, I think, is the growth aspect. People have much less patience today.
Okay.
In terms of growing their career.
Getting up the ladder.
Yes, exactly. And it's not necessarily only the ladder, right? Before, you know, the career was only a picture of a ladder. Today, careers go, you know, very different routes. But as an organization, we have to understand that, you know, when we started working, or maybe our parents, right, it was, you know, yeah, you followed, you were happy to have a job, as you said before, right, Spencer? So I think today it's very different. And, you know, we talk about 70-20-10, right? 70% of your learning happens on the job, 20% is peer-to-peer coaching, mentoring, and 10% is the classroom training, LinkedIn Learning, or, you know, whatever you are subscribing to. But we have to make sure that in that 70%, people feel that they're learning all the time. And, you know, many organizations are so scared to take bets on internal talent. No, she's not ready. You know, she needs another year. I say my approach is, if you need another year, you're ready now. Because we need to take a little bit of chances on people as well, right? It's much easier. We go out and recruit external. We don't know what we get. We know what we have internal. So taking more chances. You know, and that's, you know, in our business today, we have the luxury, I would say, to really train people between various departments, right? So you can really, and we're quite good at that. You know, when people raise their hand and want to do something different, they can. And we have transferable skills that go globally across the world in our industry.
There's a young lady that arrived in Dubai recently. She happens to be the daughter of my housekeeper, Juliet. And she did hospitality management, did a degree in it in the Philippines. Then she came over here. She wanted to work here. I said I'd make some introductions for her. So I said, see if she can get a job. And I made a few introductions for her. And she got a job. She was a little bit disappointed, okay? Disappointed that she was starting essentially in housekeeping, okay, in this hotel, a huge hotel chain, one and only. She said, ideally, I wanted an office job. And I'm like, I get that. You've studied hard, 4 years for your degree. I get that. But you're going to work for a phenomenal organization, and you now have the chance. Doesn't matter where you start in that business, you have a chance. If you work hard, focus and commit and prove yourself to go get up that ladder and move into other departments within the business. So look at it as your learning journey. And remember, when you first start work, you're getting paid in education more and experience more than you're getting paid in the bank account. So she stopped for a minute, went through this kind of like, oh, okay, maybe. And I'm like, don't look for any more jobs now, because that was her thought. I've got this offer here, housekeeping. I probably should look for other jobs. For me, going back to when I was young, it was like, I got a job. Yes, you know, start at the bottom, I don't care. My daughter moved here to Dubai in October. She wanted to work in real estate. She got a degree in London and did stuff. And she said, I want to work in property in Dubai. Now, I know most of the brokerages here. And so the biggest brokerage, the owners I know. And I said, can you do me a favor and start her at the absolute bottom? She's my daughter. No privileges. All right. I don't want you because she's my daughter. I don't want that. Make her fight. Work for it. She's gone in at the bottom. Okay. And she's like, Dad, some of these people don't have degrees. Some of these people don't have that. And I'm like, yeah, but they have sales. They've proved that they can make sales. Get in, get your head down, work hard, demonstrate you're valuable, and you'll find that if you demonstrate you're valuable, that you move up the ladder quickly. When I look at these two examples, it's a little bit different to how my memory was. And so it kind of leans into what you were saying earlier. It's like people are different now. They're impatient. They see things differently. How do you manage that?
I mean, exactly what you were doing. You coached them, right? They were lucky to be coached by you to talk some sense in them, if I may put it like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it is, right? We need to help the younger generation understand, you know, you have to be realistic. And, you know, if you grow too quickly, honestly, it can happen, right? But there is a big risk that you're missing an important layer in between. And if you do, you're not going to be able to grow particularly much more, because you really miss the basics that other people come with. But we need to talk to people about this. We need to explain to them. I think this is super important, and we need to do it early on.
Hey. I just...
It's almost like we we teach practicing gratitude a lot, don't we? It's like, let's be grateful. Let's remember, because you can never be unhappy when you're grateful. And it's like to me, it's a really important thing to consider. But then you see some young people nowadays, it's like, be grateful. Please be grateful because you've got this opportunity.
Yeah, it's true. And we say, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. But we don't want to join them, right? So I think we should never give up on that coaching. And eventually things will change as well, right? Either they will conform to how it was, and how it was, it's not going to be exactly how it was. The stints are shorter, right? Because we realize that. And we do more effort to grow people. And we do more effort in terms of talking about their career, listening to them, asking them what they want to do, put in the development plans for them, give them training offers so they can, you know, grab that. And then they can grow, right? Careers look different today. It will never go back to when we started working, or, you know, our parents. It's not going to go back, luckily. But I think, you know, we are evolving, all of us together. And we could also be coached by the younger generation, right? It's very interesting to ask them, like, what do you prefer in an organization? What makes you tick? Why did you choose how you chose? And what are you experiencing that you're not completely happy with, that you think we should change, you know, because then, you know, they also understand that, okay, we are being heard and listened to, and we can maybe make some adjustments and changes so that we can continue to meet, you know, the new talent that are entering the work landscape.
How many countries have you worked in?
worked.
Sweden?
Yeah, Sweden, Singapore, and UAE in terms of being based.
Okay, so you've worked in essentially three different continents. We kind of heard about wellness, a kind of Scandinavian type of thing, an American type of thing, a Canadian type of thing. That then became a bit of a British kind of thing, but it didn't exist here. Now, I've been here 19 years. There wasn't, that conversation didn't take place. How is wellness perceived in the West compared to how it's perceived here in the Middle East versus how it's perceived if you've got experience in Singapore over there in the Far East?
I think the West probably leads the way. And has been doing for a longer period of time. You know, work-life balance was a concept there many years ago, before it was a concept anywhere else. And you talked in Sweden, you know, people are like, 4 o'clock, I'm picking up my kid, I'm not picking up the phone. Goodbye. And that's okay, because everybody's kind of the same. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but...
No, you're not. Before I was in Dubai, I worked in Amsterdam, and one of my big clients was ABN AMRO. And so I would have meetings in their offices a lot of the time. ABN AMRO and Nike were these two big accounts I had. Anyway, ABN AMRO, I'd be in meetings, and I'd start to see the building at 5 o'clock empty. But like, en masse empty. I'd never been anywhere in my life where it was like everyone was like, putting down tools and leaving the office, and that's the end of my day, I'm done. It was like, well, haven't you got stuff? You know, some of you might have stuff you still got to do. But, and then also the you could work a 4-day week. And also if you had a baby, you had much more paternity leave, which was all really alien to me.
Yeah, I know. Very equal society, but very beneficial also when it comes to social security, right? So you have a government that is backing you up because you pay 55% tax. As well, but that's why I think so. In Asia, it's more, I would say, people work longer days. They don't talk as much. At least when I was living there, it was 15 years back, so it was quite some time, right? But I'm still covered Asia since then, and it's less focused because it's different kind of societies, and you have a huge influx from China with very hungry population. And they are also really good at digital and technology and tools, right? So you can kind of work differently. Maybe you work in different geographies and different environments, but you're still working, right? Because you do everything on WeChat. That's how they live. And coming here, where people come here and always, you know, people say, you work so hard in Dubai. You work so many hours in Middle East, right? It's fascinating and interesting, but I think somehow it has also to do with, you know, if we can be a bit more productive, if we can do more things, and we can look at the output rather than the input. So it's not about the hours you're ticking, it's really about what is the impact you have and what is it that you are delivering. And that should translate into kind of efficiencies, right? And letting people control a bit more. But, you know, it's also about trust, right? We somehow, organizations somehow still... We don't feel 100% comfortable. We hire adults sometimes. People are treated a little bit like children. And if we have that distrust, we're also not able maybe to let go and bringing that well-being, flexibility. And, you know, when I see that you're working your hours, that's when you work hard. Is it so? I'm not sure.
Let's talk about some tips that you can give for people that are... wanting to understand how to get the best out of their employees. I think we've covered quite a lot of this. So let's just go back and recap. There's four things that are important to consider. So we speak about their health, their physical health, sorry, their mental health, their career development. What was the fourth thing?
Social aspect.
And the social aspect, which I thought was really interesting. Mm. So with everybody that works for an organization, pay close attention to these areas and work strategies out that can help focus on that for the well-being of everybody. Stop thinking well-being is mushy and focus on well-being being related to either ROI or performance or growth or development or future or career goals even. Would that be fair?
Great summary.
Can I come and work for you in HR?
Any day.
Hey! It's just interesting when I think about that. Without the risk of being stereotypical, some people are more emotional than others. No direction there going with anything. How do you deal? I mean, because I when I get in a, my business partner Danielle says you have an incredible ability at making people cry, and I'm like, yeah, but why were they crying? Should they have really been crying? And a part of me, this is 10 years ago, would have been, they're a bit emotional, aren't they? And maybe that was unfair, maybe that was fair, but it's in the past, so we'll leave it there. Emotionally charged situations. How do you deal with that? How do you, someone like you with your skills, how do you put together some form of whatever to deal with that?
Good question. And also, if people are over emotional, some people are under emotional. That's one way to look at it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So clinical, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but, you know, you said somebody, you know, you're overreacting. Well, you are underreacting. You know, it's always two sides of the coins. So one suggestion or tip I would say to deal with such a situation is really to say, okay, I tend to think, you know, here's a, you know, we all want what is best for the situation we're trying to solve. But we come from different experiences, from different viewpoints, from different angles. So one way to do with it, picture a room, picture a ceiling, an empty ceiling. One person is coming from that angle, sees this thing. One is coming from this, sees this thing. They need to meet, and you might need to facilitate that meeting. That's one thing. The other suggestion I would say, it's breathing techniques. Actually, it helps. Box breathing, and, you know, just breathe like a box in and out. And this is really, you know, you ground yourself in your stomach and your feelings, and you can tell the others to do the same. And sometimes you just want to say, hey, okay. I've done that many times when you have two parties and there's like a heated argument, actually, which is not a healthy one. Sometimes there are good debates. Some debates should not be held because they tend to be personal. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, okay, hold on. You just break in.
I love that. That was really assertive. Yeah. As you said that out loud, I even got in line there. And I was like, all right, okay, fair enough. Talk to me about technology, but more importantly, how AI is already making a difference within HR and what you see the impact of that.
Yeah, somebody asked me in a session sometime back, I said, yeah, we're so scared, like 80% of our jobs are going to be done by the robots or the avatars. And we know this is not the case, right? So my view on this is make friends with technology. We really need to embrace technology because that's how we can make our jobs more fun, more cool, and we can have bigger impact because the tasks that technology can help us do, we can skip doing, and then we can focus more on the personal aspect of the interaction with human beings. So I'm all for that. And AI also will obviously be able to just help us make so much better decisions, help candidates when we recruit, help us during recruitment, help people find roles for them, make people design development plans. So, you know, there's a lot that technology can do in the HR space. And I'm looking forward to seeing that as, you know, it develops.
It's good that you're enthusiastic about it.
Yeah.
I think that's the right approach.
Yeah.
Because people do live in fear right now, don't they?
They do. But ChatGPT helps you, saves you a lot of time, write scripts for you, write announcements for you. It's great.
ChatGPT, give me 10 questions to ask Marie-Louise on the podcast today.
See?
I didn't do that, but... Hey, look, it's honestly, it's been so much fun talking to you today. You've got a really lovely, warm energy about you, and I can see why you in HR are probably somebody that's perfect for that type of role. But Marie-Louise, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.